Ladies and gentlemen, it's Thursday, Football Scoop Podcast. I'm Scott Roussel. I've got John Bryce, Doug Samuels. Zach Barnett is doing other things. Trying to get his mind right. Trying to hold on to his picks lead. He's up two for now.
His loss being out after he just made a push to permanently claim the starting quarterback position on this podcast. Consistency is a big key. You got to show up to work.
Got sore. He had a game Tuesday night. I don't know how he said through. Can't go Thursday. I don't get it. It's okay. We still love the guy. All right. We got college football tonight. Tulsa's at ECU. I think ECU handles that. I think Tulsa will put up some fight, but I think ECU handles that.
Yeah, probably. But Tulsa is and not just because of the win against the dreadful Oak State team. I mean, they've been in almost every single game. Mm-hmm. Trey Lamb, once again, just making an immediate impact. What he did at Gardner-Webb had never really been done. He had one strong year at ETSU that he parlayed into this Tulsa opportunity. And as we noted on our recent Intel piece, Scott, Barfield, his special teams coordinator, is an elite dude.
Agree. Friday night, Louisville is at Miami, and I think Louisville gives them way more than they want. And Louisville might just win that game. I'm still hearing those picks, but I'm telling you, Louisville's deep in that one.
Yeah, it's tough to count on a Jeff Brown team. You're going to see at least one flea flicker in that game, I feel like. That's his kind of staple. Famously gave an hour-long presentation on the flea flicker and all of its variations at the Michigan High School Coaches Association Clinic a couple years ago. I just think Miami's too good top to bottom, especially in the trenches. We talk about it every week. I think that ends up being the difference in this game.
Yeah, I completely agree. And this is a Louisville team that had to rally a couple of weeks ago to find a way to win at Pitt. They did find a way to win. But I also think that this Louisville team, from talking with coaches, is not quite at where last year's Louisville team was. And I think that's going to ultimately do them in, along with the trench ability of Miami is up there, I think, with just about anybody mm-hmm. in college football right now. And Reuben Bain is in a lot of ways playing like this year's Abdul Carter from Penn State. Like that's the comp I have for what Reuben Bain is doing this year is what Abdul Carter did a year ago for Penn State.
Big. Nebraska's at Minnesota. Minnesota at home is catching 7.5. I really don't bet in real life, but if I did, I'd probably take Minnesota.
PJ Fleck always seems to win one of those games that he shouldn't, and that's what this matchup feels like. Like everyone's talking about Nebraska, everyone's talking about Matt Rhule and being connected to the Penn State opening. Is that enough of a distraction for PJ Fleck and his crew to get a dub at home? That was a hard game, one of the harder games for me to pick this week.
Yeah, I don't I think Minnesota honestly has a great shot of winning this game outright. I mm-hmm. certainly do not understand the 7.5-point line, and I know Scott has a few different phrases, but one of them has been for this season anyway that he's taking the under on Nebraska. And so if he's still taking the under on Nebraska, that pretty much means this is an L for the Huskers in his book.
So, you know, we started off the season, I said over under on win totals, and Nebraska's was 7.5, and I said under. And I still am on under. In counting that, I absolutely had them as losing to Penn State late. They have Penn State and Iowa to close it out. Now I'm like, we'll see about that game. Yeah, Penn State thing, you know. Who knows how they'll respond to this change, but I'm still on Nebraska on the under. So, yeah, I think Minnesota wins this game. I'm not a betting guy, but Cal is only like a 10-point favorite with North Carolina coming cross-country playing late at night, body clock time. I like Cal in that game. Big.
Yeah.
Moving to Saturday. JB, Saturday. LSU's at Vandy, and Vandy's a favorite.
Yeah, I was just talking to some people in Nashville last night about that, some people with direct connections to the Vandy football program. There's extreme confidence on the West End there in Nashville. They're ready to anchor down again. It's not just that Vandy is favored in this game, which even going into this season and expecting Vanderbilt to continue its success to, under Clark Lea and with Diego Pavia as the trigger man on offense, it's still noteworthy because I believe this is the first time in the history of Vanderbilt football that the Commodores have been favored against another top 25 team. The history. The first time ever.
Ever. Kind of a big deal. Yeah.
LSU comes in, they're number four in scoring defense, but I mean, we talk about their offense every week. They're 86th nationally in scoring offense. And meanwhile, Vandy comes in with a top seven scoring offense. We talk a lot about the heading into this year, the quarterbacks and the returners, and a lot of those have fallen flat on their face. Lenora Sellers, South Carolina. Nussmeier at LSU, like there's been a lot of underachieving returning quarterbacks. Diego Pavia is not in that conversation. The dude continues to be a dog and to live up to that billing.
So Lenora Sellers has not had the great season like you just said, but LSU, absolutely, their defense just stoned him. Like, he got nothing.
That's
Diego Pavia is kind of in that same mold. Different dude, though.
Yeah, look, if LSU is going to have a chance to win this, it's going to be twofold. Blake Baker and Garrett Nussmeier finally plays like Garrett Nussmeier of a year ago. If they don't get that, and the one thing is, you know, Blake Baker's defense will show up because it has shown up every single game, every single week this year. You cannot say that remotely about any facet of the LSU offense. But if LSU is going to, what I call, plant the flag and salvage this season for now, it has to start this weekend in Music City.
Think about what we're talking about, guys. Talking about LSU has to be able to beat Vanderbilt.
Has to save its season. Have to save its season by beating Vanderbilt. Not just has to be able to beat Vanderbilt. Has to save its season by beating Vanderbilt.
Ryan Kelly, here we go. Georgia Tech is at Duke. What do we think, guys?
I mean, Brent Key, that program, you can tell, is coached by a former offensive line coach. They're top 30 nationally in long rushing plays, fifth in sacks allowed, top 30 in third down conversions, which means they're winning on first and second down. So, you know, as much credit as we give Manny Diaz for being a great defensive mind, this Duke team is not elite defensively. And I think that bites them in the butt here this week with Brent Key and the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets coming.
Yeah. Ramblin' wreck.
The rambling wreck of Georgia Tech, the hell of an engineer. I just like Tech's physicality in this game. And you guys know it because I was using the line in our Slack channel yesterday. Jeep Wade, one of the more unheralded best names in college football, assistant coaching, offensive line coaches, his phrase, STA, sandpaper that booty. That's what Georgia Tech is going to do this weekend.
Okay. All right. Washington comes across to Michigan. Washington hasn't played super well, but they wind up winning most of their games. Haven't played a massive schedule. Michigan's a test.
This is it's not just a test for Washington. This is a test to see where Michigan goes with its season, because Michigan isn't done with difficult games. And it was really non-competitive last week at USC. I don't know how many people are incredibly surprised that USC won last weekend. I remain, and had this discussion this week, especially with USC coming into town here in South Bend, I remain most surprised by the fact that USC physically handled Michigan on both sides of the ball. And yeah. Oklahoma had throttled down on Michigan earlier this year and really made them look incredibly disjointed on offense and sort of suffocated them. But for all of Michigan's woes in the transition from Harbaugh to Sharon Moore, there have been very few times where you felt like Michigan just got physically whipped, and USC physically whipped Michigan. So I think this is an identity game for Michigan.
I saw Washington's O-line is on the midseason watch list for the Joe Moore Award, which I believe is the best award in college football, going to the best offensive line unit. You know, the matchup I'm really interested in is we've got two guys on these stats that have a bevy of NFL experience in Jed Fish and Wink Martindale on the defensive side. So going to see two NFL-like minds going at it, two NFL-style offenses going at it. And I think I just think Michigan wins this game. I think Washington has been underwhelming in a lot of areas. You could say the same about Michigan. But I just think Michigan has enough talent there to get this done.
If Washington comes cross country and gets another win after doing so by coming from behind in the fourth quarter at Maryland, it will again be because of the Huskies' defense. We haven't seen enough out of Washington's offense over the first almost 2 months of this season. But the defense, I mean, the defense even throttled down on Ohio State a couple of weeks ago there in Seattle and held the Buckeyes, I think, to 23 or 24 points and kept that game relatively close. I think it was maybe a 13-6 game at one point before Ohio State ended up winning, like I said, 23-6, 24-6, something along those lines. So if you can hold down that Ohio State offense, your defense should give you a chance at Michigan. What kind of bounce back does Bryce Underwood have after, I think, throwing two picks last week at USC?
Yeah, bad week. Yep. All right, you mentioned Oklahoma. Oklahoma is at South Carolina. South Carolina's a heck of a stretch. Couldn't get it done versus LSU. Now they got Oklahoma's not playing great either. How's this one play out?
Oklahoma's a different team without John Mateer healthy, a healthy, full-strength John Mateer. I liked it, Oklahoma in this one. I think Brent Venables taking the reins of the defense has paid off big so far. So I think the Sooners get this one. I'm not a – I just – South Carolina's got a murderer's row remaining on their schedule, and I just think Oklahoma gets this one.
I think Oklahoma's going to be suffering a bit from a deep-fried Twinkie Texas State Fair hangover. And I would pick the home team in this game. And so plus Carolina has the best stadium name in all of college football. And they've got the cockabooses. So give me the Fighting Roosters all day long.
Williams John Bryce Stadium. That's beautiful. I like it. That was good. Oklahoma's like a 5-point favorite in this one. I kind of like the home team as well, man.
Yeah. I don't see Oklahoma being a 5-point favorite. Like I can understand you could flip a coin and I would understand you picking either side of the coin to pick this game, but Oklahoma has offensive issues with or without John Mateer in a lot of ways. They're certainly a much different unit when Mateer is healthy. We know he's not healthy. He's still only going to be 24 days removed from surgery to repair a broken bone in his hand at the time this game kicks off. And once again, Shane Beamer on the SEC teleconference this week, he's like, I didn't want to be 3-3 where we're at this year. I didn't want to be a lost team last year, but we're leaning into this schedule. We get to play this schedule. And they have Lenore Sellers, who's certainly going to be a lot tougher to tackle than John Mateer as Mateer continues to recover from a broken hand. And they have Dylan Stewart, who I heard another SEC coach call the best defensive player in the country. Those two components and being at home, sandstorm, baby.
Sellers last year had burst. Like, you remember last year, especially against LSU, when he broke through the line, he went like 80 yards. He was the fastest guy on the field. And this year, I just haven't seen that. I don't know why.
Yeah, he's bulked up a little bit and gotten stronger. You wonder if in the process of that, getting up to about 240 or whatever, he lost some of that burst.
All right. A&M is at Arkansas, I believe. I think it's at Arkansas. And Bobby Petrino's guys came out pretty good against the Vols and just didn't have enough. Do they have enough to shock A&M? Rhetorical. No.
Oh, if I was going to be forced to pick one upset this weekend, I think I would call the Hogs. I think A&M's good, but they've got some defensive vulnerabilities. Marcel Reed is much improved. He will still turn the ball over. And A&M has everything to lose in this game, and Arkansas already has a fired coach. So the Hogs have absolutely nothing to lose.
Yeah, I would agree. I was looking through some – just where some of these key matchups rank nationally, and Arkansas caught my eye. They're converting almost 60% of their third down conversion. So I agree with JB. If you had to pick an upset, you like Arkansas offensively under Bobby Petrino has been really good. But the Mike Elko difference, it's hard to pick against the Aggies right now.
But clearly Vegas or the odds makers, whomever you want to credit, feels like they know a little something. A&M is 6-0 and number 4 in the country, and they're a touchdown favorite in the game.
Yeah, at Arkansas.
Yeah, at Arkansas.
Yeah. I still like A&M. Ole Miss is at Georgia. Ole Miss got them last year. Ole Miss did not play great against Washington State. Georgia, I don't know. I don't know, guys. What do we think?
It feels like to be a national title contender for most teams, you've got to survive one of those trap games. And I think that's exactly what happened to Ole Miss last week. They were looking past Washington State in anticipation of this Georgia mashup. And Lane Kiffin ripped into his team at the end of the game saying, you know, this is not our standard. We've got to wake up. All those things you expect to hear from a head coach. They'll be ready to go for this game. This was by far the toughest one for me to pick. I kind of went back and forth. I think Ole Miss has more in the tank offensively, and their creativity, I think, had me leaning towards them. But it's just so hard to pick against Kirby Smart in some of these big matchups.
Well, especially when you get as many timeouts as you want.
That's true.
Wave them off. That way I wouldn't call timeout. Not calling timeouts.
I think Georgia wins, and I think Georgia covers. What Ole Miss has done under Lane Kiffin is phenomenal. I think he noted they're 28-1 in their last 29 home games. Well, this was not in the Grove, baby. And Kirby Smart is not losing two games inside Sanford Stadium this season, and he's already lost one. And as much as Trinidad Chambliss is this year's Diego Pavia story, I think that fairy tale gets a chapter they don't want this weekend between the hedges. So I like Georgia, and I like Georgia to cover.
I like Georgia to win the game. Don't know about covering. Doesn't matter, though. Just skins in the wall. SMU is at Clemson, boys.
It's not the same SMU squad that we saw last year. You could also say the same for Clemson, but Clemson's got a little bit more momentum on their side. I think they've figured some things out as far as who they are. I pick Clemson in this one.
Yeah, I've got the Tigers. I'm not a big mock draft guy, but I respect what Mel Kiper has done, the longevity of it, and I think he's got 3 Clemson players in his top 20, maybe his top 18. And I think all 3 of those guys are defensive players. And for whatever reason, SMU is not remotely approaching the levels it was a year ago. And it's crazy to think we're just now at the midpoint of October, 15 days from Halloween, and an ACC championship game rematch of 2 teams that went to the playoffs is a complete afterthought in my week. Yeah, like right. it's an absolute non-needle mover. So
that's fascinating. You're absolutely right. All right, UNLV is at Boise. UNLV, it has not been pretty, but they're undefeated. Boise has 2 losses. JB, you were there for 1. You've seen him in person recently. How do we think this is at Boise?
Yeah, Boise's got to keep the UNLV offense off the field to have a chance in this game. This is Maddox Madsen is a gritty competitor, does a nice job of running their offense. This Boise team is a shell of what we saw a year ago, and I don't think it can play catch up very well on the offensive side. So It has to stay on the field, and its defense has to get some early stops because UNLV can score with anybody. Now, they can't stop anybody from scoring. Their defense has got to quit treating it like some of those Vegas spots that you know I'm talking about. Like everybody's having a good time. That can't continue to be the case.
UNLV is ranked 111th nationally in scoring off or scoring defense, giving up about 30 points a game. So that you're not going to remain undefeated giving up 30 points a game.
I mean, they beat Air Force last week like 51-48, and they had to score in the last minute.
They had to score, yeah. Then Arizona, I mean, Air Force should have come back, but they didn't. I mean, yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. And I love Troy Calhoun and Air Force. Like, the people who regularly watch this pod or listen to me anywhere else know my respect for Troy Calhoun, and the dude knows offense. Air Force does not go around scoring 48 points.
No, they do not. Vegas is smarter than we are typically. Boise's almost a 2-touchdown favorite in this one. And I'm like,
Boise at home is key. 2 touchdowns, man. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Big 12. Texas Tech is at Arizona State. Big game. Arizona State's been up and down. Texas Tech has been playing football.
I think the confidence factor for this one is in the Texas Tech locker room. Like even hearing Kenny Dillingham talk about his group, he realizes they're not the same team as they were last year. And I know we've talked about that on previous pods, but Texas Tech has everything going in their favor right now, and they just need to keep it rolling.
Yeah, Texas Tech is waving the Big 12 flag right now. They're carrying that conference's entire banner. Arizona State will show up to play, be ready, and play well. And they expect to have Sam Levitt back. So that's significant. It's not just that he's been back on the practice field this week at the quarterback position, but he was back without even any tape or wrap on his foot midweek. That's clearly an incredibly encouraging sign for Arizona State. And the people in the Valley of the Sun absolutely love Kenny Dillingham, but a 4 o'clock game is a lot different than if that game was under the lights at night. And so I think because of that, you know, Texas Tech, for being this iteration of Texas Tech, all these guys have only played together this year, but they all have played a lot of football. So they'll handle this situation okay, because even though they're new teammates, they're not new by and large to significant games like this.
Yeah. I think out there, that's like a 1 o'clock kick. Yeah. All right. I'm not saying that didn't come on this podcast because Texas is at Kentucky, but maybe Zach didn't come on this podcast because Texas is at Kentucky.
Yeah. He's been calling this loss since preseason, so I doubt we're picking this game this week. I clearly have not even looked at our picks, but if we were, I doubt that Zach, I'll impugn him since he's not here. I doubt that Zach would follow through on 8 weeks of saying Longhorns better watch out or they'll get steered in the bluegrass. I doubt he would pick Kentucky.
Agreed.
I actually put it in the picks literally just to force his hand. I did. Penn State is at Iowa. Who knows what Penn State's going to be this week? Different quarterback, different head coach. I don't know.
I don't see it going well for Penn State. Not to say that Iowa is a juggernaut on either side of the football, but I mean, unless Penn State can find Jerry Neuheisel to take over an offensive coordinator or something like that, I just don't see it going well for the Nittany Lions in Iowa.
You know, we get to pick this game, and Scott introduces it. And for those of you only listening to our sweet dulcet tones and not watching us on YouTube, you don't know that Scott got up and walked out of screen. I thought he was paying tribute to James Franklin. Penn State's not going to win this game. Iowa defense is too good, and Tim Lester and Mark Gronowski are growing together every week to help run that Hawkeyes offense. We probably didn't spend enough time last Sunday talking about how absolutely pathetic the Wisconsin showing was. I did try to look it up. Iowa scored 17 points in the first quarter last weekend. I believe that was the first time either since the COVID year or 2021 that Iowa had scored 17 points in a quarter against a fellow Big Ten foe?
You could have said since the turn of the century, and I'd have been like, sure.
I could have said since they invented football at Rutgers, and you would have said, sure.
Sure. First time ever.
Right. Tim Lester, baby. Tim Lester.
Vols are at Bama. Bryant Denny. Vols got a shot?
Yeah, they absolutely have a shot, but Tim Banks has got to show more than he's shown in recent weeks. The two best offensive teams that he's faced this year, Arkansas and Georgia, have put up, I think, a combined 72, 74 points, something like that. And look, Bobby Petrino has made a career out of carving people up. Mike Bobo has not. And so if Mike Bobo is going to carve you in Neyland Stadium the way that he did, and then Bobby Petrino also found quite a bit last week, then, yeah, that offensive triumvirate for the Crimson Tide running things from DeBoer to Grubb to Sheridan and Ty Simpson, this is Alabama's game. But I like the Vols to be in it all the way to the end. I just think home field is the key and a little bit of belief and a little bit more defense.
Ty Simpson's playing as well as any quarterback in the country right now, completing balls at an unbelievable rate. I know he's ranked in the top 25 in terms of completion percentage, but just the last two or three game stretch, he's really separated himself from the rest of the field. I saw something earlier this week. He's, you know, considered a Heisman Trophy front runner, and it just feels like Alabama has figured out who they are, and I think that's bad news for Tennessee.
And Ty Simpson, obviously a coach's son, Jason Simpson, his dad at UT Martin, one of the longest tenured Division I coaches at any level, closing in on 20 years atop the UT Martin Skyhawks program. But also, in addition to being a coach's son, Ty Simpson is just tough as hell. I mean, he took some licks against Georgia, even though Alabama was the aggressor. But he got absolutely abused last week at Missouri and just kept popping up and leading Alabama. And that was, to me, the most impressive thing I'd seen from Ty this year. And he's barely turned the ball over. He has grown so much since that Florida State game. He will further solidify his Heisman candidacy this weekend.
SC is coming to Notre Dame, JB. How do you like it?
Heavy, heavy rain forecast as of right now. I checked this morning, 93% chance of rain on Saturday here in South Bend. You would never know it today. I might try to hit golf balls this afternoon. We're talking Chamber of Commerce postcard weather here today in the Michiana region. Not going to be the case Saturday. Notre Dame is missing its starting center, Ashton Craig, who entered the year coming back from injury, and also entered the year as a guy on the radar of a lot of NFL scouts. They're going to have to go to a redshirt freshman, Joe Otting. That's significant. Notre Dame also a little dinged up on its defensive interior, and maybe without nickelback Devontae Smith, the transfer from Alabama. You want a veteran against Mekhi Lemon, who could have his own Heisman moment this weekend. We've seen USC players make their case in the Heisman race against Notre Dame before. And if Devontae Smith cannot go with that right calf injury, that means they turn to true freshman Dallas Golden. Now, Dallas Golden's going to be a really good player. He was a consensus 4-star, top 100 prospect out of Florida, but he's a true freshman going against Mekhi Lemon, who is as versatile and explosive as anybody in the country. USC has not particularly missed Zach Branch this year because of Mekhi Lemon. And so if the weather holds or the rain is cleared out by then, I think that gives USC every chance to be in this contest in the fourth quarter. If the rain is still there, even without the starting center, I give the nod to Notre Dame. But here's the other thing. Because Notre Dame lost those first two games of the season to the numbers 2 and 4 teams in the country this week in the polls, Miami and Texas A&M. Like, this is Notre Dame's season. So you can't ignore the fact that I just said, even before Franklin got fired last Saturday, I said Penn State's season died on 10-11-25. Well, if Notre Dame doesn't win this game, then Notre Dame, literally less than 9 months removed from playing for the national championship, sees its 2025 season end. There's not another ranked team on the Irish schedule. There's no conference championship game to try to sneak into. And speaking of Mel Kiper, he this week had Jeremiah Love, the Irish All-American tailback, his number two rated prospect on his 26th draft board. And he had Jeremiah Love's backfield teammate, Jadarian Price, as his number three rated running back. He had Love, his number one running back, and Jadarian Price, his number three running back. And you're Notre Dame, and you're staring the specter of your season ending Saturday if you don't find a way to beat USC.
The weather definitely tips the scales in Notre Dame's favor. I see. I think they're favored by like 9.5 or something right now by Vegas, which, you know, watching USC and their performance against Michigan, I think D'Anton Lynn deserves a ton of credit for defensively. It's been a long time since you turned on and watched a USC defense and felt good about it, you know, making tackles in the open field and being physical in the front seven. But as well as Lincoln Riley is going to adjust to the weather, he'll get Lemon some touches on screens and things like that and set up some deep shots. Expect to see a lot of GT counter from the Trojans in that game. But I just think Notre Dame is too talented, especially in the backfield with that kind of weather, to be able to hand the ball off to those two dudes and expect anything less than a win.
Here's one more quick note is, and I think we discussed it, maybe you brought it up Sunday on the pod, Doug, about Brett Bielema saying they felt they had to run a little more tempo than they wanted to against Ohio State because that was where they found success. Well, USC loves tempo and rhythm under Lincoln Riley regardless, but they're facing a guy in Chris Ash who also has been in the NFL game for several years. So I do think if USC gets into a rhythm, and we've seen this Notre Dame defense already slow to adjust to Chris Ash, play much better ball now than they did early in the season, but they've had some slow adjustments. Now they might be missing their starting nickel. I think that's a component to watch very closely in this game is the Lincoln Riley chess match against Chris Ash.
Amen. All right. Holy War. Utah is at BYU. BYU is undefeated, and Utah is favored to win this game. Talk to me, JB.
Yeah, I hadn't studied the line. I knew that the game was
a couple points, three or four.
Yeah. I knew the game was being played this year at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. An awesome backdrop. It will be Crazy Town Banana Land on the atmosphere there for the Holy War. It will be one of the best visuals of the weekend. It's snowing right now in Utah. So you would expect the Wasatch and the Uinta mountain ranges to be snow-capped. Mount Timpanogos right there behind the BYU stadium, certainly going to be snow-capped. But I think this is also putting a cap on BYU's perfect start to its season. I like Utah's physicality. I like Utah's defensive line. Bear Bachmeier running the BYU offense is this gritty, true redshirt freshman, as it was put to me. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. He doesn't know when he's not that good at something. He's just out there playing ball, and he makes almost every game look like backyard football for the Cougars. It's really fun. But Dampier is doing a much better job running the Utah offense. I just think that Dampier and those two big stud tackles for Utah, particularly the one who's also being projected as a first-round pick, coupled with Morgan Scally's defense. I got the Utes winning this one like 20-17.
All due respect to BYU. I think at the beginning of the year, we were talking about how great their defense was. And then you look at the schedule and like, they really haven't played anyone through those first three games. They allowed 16 points through the first three. Right, but they don't really have an impressive win on their schedule. They beat Colorado by three. They beat West Virginia by 14. Arizona, their last game, won by six. It just feels like this BYU team is undefeated, but I don't think they're a great undefeated. This would go a long way in staking claim to being legit, right? And then they've got Iowa State's not going to be an easy game. Is their next opponent after Utah? They've got Texas Tech still on the schedule, TCU, Cincinnati, and UCF. So they've got a they've got their work cut out for them in the second part of their schedule for sure.
Yeah, they, you know, they won 10 games a year ago. Tremendous bounce back season for Kalani Sitake after really struggling in 23. But I'm with you, Doug. That's a little bit of a hollow man syndrome for that undefeated mark. And not only did they just nip Arizona last week by 6, Doug, but that game went overtime as well. And after being up 14-0, I believe, early in that game, BYU was really overall pretty fortunate to get it into overtime. And I know from speaking with the Arizona staff this weekend, they got a really, really ugly taste in their mouths because they feel like they absolutely left that game on the field.
I'll give you guys a really weird one. I don't know. Last game of the night, Florida State cross country at Stanford. Stanford is woeful. They're terrible. Last year, Tommy Castellanos was unbelievable at BC early in the season, and then he just faded to nothing. I'm concerned that Florida State might fade to nothing and Stanford beat them while everybody in the country is probably asleep. And that would not bode well for Florida State's future.
Yeah, I don't like that 18.5 point line. I would feel very comfortable taking Stanford at the point and the points. They're bad.
They're real bad.
You know, sometimes I talk about coaches being overemployed, and that's not the coach's fault necessarily. Stanford has some over-rostered guys, and they probably should not be playing power conference football. But Frank Wright has done a pretty decent job of just keeping that Stanford team bought in and held together with duct tape in this interim season. So I'm with you, Scott. Like, I think Florida State is in for an absolute fight, and I would be very comfortable taking Stanford at home and almost 3 touchdowns.
So it's a weird one, JB. I feel like this is the type of game that Florida State has so much more potential. They should, if they were in the right frame of mind, be able to go out there and win by 35 pretty easily. Pretty easily. I'm just not sure they're in the right frame of mind. And they might get out there and just think, they're like, we want to play in the farm? What? Huh? And Stanford might just whip their ass. We'll see. Zach, buddy, hang in there. You're going to be okay.
He's talking about the picks, the record, not that.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, that's just the picks element. I don't know how much hope there is just in everyday existence for him.
Everybody have a great time. Enjoy the games. We'll be putting picks up on footballscoop.com. We'll be doing a lot of things. Just fascinating content. Great work, gentlemen. We're out.